So what I want to talk about this evening, in a nutshell, is digital health. And digital health comes in many forms. But the reason why I want you to pay attention is that I can't even get the slide to move. Is that it is a brilliant way of monitoring you in some shape or form. This might be monitoring by your nurse or your doctor because you've got a long-term condition, or it might be monitoring by some social services to make sure that your house is not on fire or that you have not flooded. One of the nice things about it is that it can be done very regularly. And if there is an emergency and you do need help, it can be summoned very quickly, often without you necessarily needing to actually summon it. One of the lovely things about digital health is that you can be treated at a distance. And because you're treated at a distance, it doesn't mean that you need to get in your car and drive or go by train or go by bus or anything like that. You can be remotely monitored, and within reason, you can be treated remotely too. It's also available essentially globally. So you can get the service essentially wherever you are. So if you go on holiday or something like that, clearly your doctor can't go on holiday with you, but your monitoring equipment often can. And for many people, an illness of some shape or form is a sufficient disability that they can no longer work because they have to come home to measure something, or they have to go and see the doctor on a regular basis. But if they can be monitored at work, they can actually carry on working. So for many people, digital health makes the difference between working and not working. In my experience, people who use digital health in one shape or form are much calmer and they're much happier people. And finally, they feel much greater freedom because they no longer have that dreadful feeling they are somehow chained to their house because the only way they can be monitored is actually in their house, and they need to be connected to some piece of equipment in some shape or form. So there are essentially two different types of digital health. There's one that looks after you, your body, and the other one that looks after your environment. So I'm going to start off by talking about things that look after you, your body. Now, the classic model for what's called telehealth, which is the looking at you, your body, is that you measure your vital signs on a reasonably regular basis. And that I'm sure at some stage in your lives, almost all of you will have had your blood pressure read and you'll have the cuff slipped on your arm. Well, you do something very similar at home. If you have shortage of breath, you might have something slipped over your finger, which measures the oxygen content of your blood. We do exactly the same at home. And increasingly now, that information is going into your smartphone rather than into a separate piece of equipment. And indeed, I'm told that next year, your smartphone will actually be able to measure your blood pressure and the oxygen content of your blood. In fact, it'll be able to measure all your vital signs with the obvious exception of weight, because when you stand on a smartphone, it typically doesn't do it any good. So you'll always have to use scales. But apart from that, increasingly, your smartphone will be able to do everything for you. And if you've got heart failure and your blood pressure is being monitored regularly, your weight is being monitored, and possibly your pulse is being monitored, which happens at the same time as you measure blood pressure, then that information is passed through to a computer, which does a few calculations and flags up to the to a nurse or a doctor when it thinks there's a chance that you'll have what we call an exacerbation, which means there's a chance that you might actually have a heart attack if you've got congestive heart failure. And so at that point, the nurse will ring you up, will either come along and give you a different medication or will ask you to take a medication she's already left with you. And she will then monitor, or he will monitor, your health very carefully over the next few hours to make sure that, that the condition has actually gone away and you're not going to have a heart attack. Now, that is an extremely effective way of managing people with congestive heart failure and all at a distance without them having to come into hospital. Similar things can be done if you have what's called COPD, congestive pulmonary disease, which is used to be called serious severe bronchitis, and there are a number of other names for it. And there you measure the oxygen content of your blood, and you also do exciting things like recording the colour and the volume of the sputum that you've been coughing up, which unfortunately is an important measure. And again, that is a way of predicting whether or not you are going to have an exacerbation. You're going to have a shortage of breath that would otherwise get you into hospital. And again, there are ways, not perfect, but there are ways of actually avoiding that problem. So, what can telehealth offer you? The answer is, again, to stress the fact that it is globally available, that it can monitor you regularly, and it can measure really quite high detail of your vital signs. As far as your doctor's concerned, it will give them much greater reach. When we install this in Kent, I understand that before telehealth was introduced, the community matrons there were managing something like 50 patients each. When they got involved with telehealth, that went up to over 100. So it, as far as the health service is concerned, it's also a much more efficient way of delivering care. As a result of this, it means you can carry on with your daily life much more effectively. It means that every vital sign is recorded and can be checked up on later. This is one way in which you can remind people to take their medication. And depending on the type of device that you use, you can actually give them a reason as to why they should take it. Because what you actually find is that relatively few people don't take their medicines because they purely forgot. There's often a good reason why they didn't do it, so they have to be reminded why they should take it. When you are treated by your doctor now, if you don't have telehealth, typically it will be what's called episodic. You will go and see your doctor, he will do something for you, you will then go back to see him and say it's all right. You'll essentially be signed off. What telehealth enables you to do is to provide continuous care all the time so that somebody is always monitoring what is happening to you. One of the other great things that telehealth is good for is mental health. And if you do have heart failure, if you do have COPD, if you do have diabetes, the evidence is that a number of people have what's called a comorbidity of depression. In other words, they get depressed because of their disease. And you can do things through telehealth to diagnose if people are depressed, and then you can help them feel less depressed and you can help them feel much happier. And as far as the National Health Service is concerned, that can make a huge difference because a depressed person with a long-term condition costs about twice as much to manage as a somebody who's happy with a long-term condition. It enables you to treat the whole patient because you can look at a number of different conditions that they've got at any one time. And it also means that you're a much happier person overall. So moving on to look at the benefits that you get from this. The first benefit is the ability to anticipate exacerbations. So it keeps you out of hospital. You can also care for more people. Just to make the point again, it helps you stay out of hospital. One of the things that people get very concerned about with the technology is they say, well, I'm not going to have the nurse seeing me. I'm not going to have the doctor seeing me. But when you look at the amount of time a clinician spends with you every month, if you have a long-term condition, you're lucky if it's much more than an hour. But with the electronics, you're being monitored 24 hours a day, every day, for that whole month. As I mentioned, you can deal with depression and anxiety too. And finally, because you've got a full record of everything that's happened to you, you can use what's called big data on an anonymous basis and start looking for linkages and connections that you were unaware of were there before. So I'm going to move on now to monitoring your environment, what's called telecare, which I'm sure a number of you here will be experiencing and will have experienced, because that's much more generally available in the UK now. And what that can do is it can pick up smoke. It can pick up if your house is on fire. It can pick up if there's a flood in your house. It can pick up if you've fallen. All this, of course, requires that you have a smoke detector, that you have a flood detector, and you have a falls detector. It can pick up if there's a wet bed and there is an appropriate sensor, it can pick that up. It can pick up if there's any carbon monoxide in your atmosphere. It can pick up if somebody's turned the gas on and has not lit it, so there's a natural gas detector. Again, it can be used for reminding people to take their medication. You can use it as a bed sensor and you can use it as a chair sensor. And the purpose of doing it that way is that if, for example, somebody gets up in the middle of the night and they fall, then after 20 minutes, the monitoring service can be notified that the person hasn't got back into bed. They can send a message through to the telecare system in their house or their flat, just asking if all is well, and if they get no answer, they can send help. And then for people who have dementia, it has a particularly important value in that, that there are now devices that you can use that will know exactly where you are. So if your daughter or your son or something like that is just a little bit concerned that you might have lost your way home from the shops or something like that, they can find out where you are. Not appropriate for everybody, and I know a lot of people refer to it as tagging, but for some people it's an absolute lifeline. You can also do a door sensor. When I was working in the London Borough of Newham, we had a considerable problem with people going into residential care. And when we investigated it, we found that almost half the people going to residential care were going to residential care because of carer exhaustion. The people who were looking after them were lying awake at night, worrying whether they were going downstairs and worrying whether they were going outside. And in Newham, we have lots of main roads. And so what we did was a very simple thing. We just put a door sensor on with an alarm in the carer's bedroom. And so the carer could then sleep, knowing that if the door was at any time opened by the person who had dementia, they could pop downstairs and guide them back upstairs. And that cut down very considerably the amount of care exhaustion that we suffered from. And you can do the same with chair sensors and finally, and I'm going to talk about this in a little bit more detail in a moment, you can also pick if one particular disability that some people have is that they have nighttime fits. And you have to deal with a nighttime fit straight away. In the borough next, or one of the boroughs next door to us in Newham, that one was not dealt with. Somebody rolled between the bed and the wall, and they got suffocated by their bedclothes. So you really have to be alert now. And as I'll show you in a few minutes, the mat can make a big difference. So I'm going to give you now, essentially to wind up my talk, to give you three examples of how you can use this technology very much for the benefit of people. So this is the example I was giving. This is somebody in the nighttime who has fits, and they need to be monitored. Now, the classic way in which this was done was that you put 10, 15 people into a home, and you employed what's called waking nights, who are people who were there to watch these people all the way through the night. It's a horrible business if you are sleeping and you know you're being watched all the time. It's a horrible business to actually be watching somebody doing that too. And so there was introduced a few years ago this mat that actually measures the vibrations from a tonic-clonic convulsion and gives a very, very rapid alert if somebody is having a fit. And so as a result of installing that, and the cost of these is about £300 or so, as a result of installing that, you only need one waking night for a large house that looks after 10, 15 people. And so obviously you can save considerably on your waking nights, which are quite expensive people. And in addition, the person concerned is able to sleep peacefully without feeling there any intrusion, without anybody rustling newspapers in their room or anything like that. So it benefits the social services or the NHS, and it also benefits the individual. One of the other examples is fires. Now, there are a few people who have real difficulty getting out of a house, even if the smoke detector is actually going. When I was working in Surrey, we found that there was something like between 6 and 9 people were dying every year because even though the smoke detector was actually sounding, they were not able to get out. And those were people who smoked, who drank more than they should do, who took drugs, who had mental health problems, who had a physical disability, or who had some form of dementia. So what we did was we introduced them to telecare. We put smoke detectors in the houses, not high-tech stuff at all. But as a result of that, we were able to summon a fire engine the moment there was a problem. And sure, there are a few false alarms, but not that many. But the end result was a considerable reduction in the number of people who died in those fires, and it has turned out to be a real lifesaver. So my final presentation, my final slide, I should say, is an example of somebody living in the countryside with a heart condition. Now, if you have a heart condition and you need, for example, to have the coagulation point of your blood measured on a regular basis, then you have to travel quite a long way, typically in to see a doctor or into the hospital. And I'm thinking now in particular of some work I did in the Highlands of Scotland, where people were travelling over 30 miles to have what's called the INR of their blood measured, which was really very inconvenient indeed. And so if they had to get an ambulance to them, the ambulance went very, very slowly indeed. So instead, what we did was we gave them what's called a coagulometer, which is one of these devices here, and it's just like it looks very similar to the glucometer that you use if you've got diabetes to find out how much glucose there is in your blood. But we connected that up to essentially a smartphone, and the end result of that was that people were able to remain in their own homes and be safer in their own homes as a result of that technology. So that is the end of my presentation. No, it isn't. Sorry. Just to summarise that digital health enables your vital signs to be measured very easily. It enables them to be done very frequently. It enables help to be called if you need it. It reduces the amount of travel you have to do. It can be done globally. It enables people to stay at work that otherwise would not be able to stay at work. It makes people happier, and it gives them much greater freedom. Thank you very much indeed.